The door of his cell slammed shut behind him, cloaking Frank in gloom once more. It was positively bright in here, though, compared to where he had spent the past 2 days. Frank stumbled over to his bunk and collapsed on it. His whole body was one giant throbbing ache. Frank wondered how long it would be before Warden Townsend assigned him and Cicero McCoy to the road gang. It couldn't be soon. Frank needed at least a little time to recover. He pondered that for a few moments, but those were the last coherent thoughts that went through his head. After that, he was sound asleep, utterly drained and exhausted by the hellish experience. Frank roused enough that evening to eat and drink a little, then fell asleep again. By the next morning, he felt better, though he was still only a shadow of his normal self. The prison surgeon came by the cell to check on him and said he would be fit to go back to work in 2 days. Those days passed fairly quickly. Frank slept a lot, ate the food that was brought to him, and let strength flow back into his body. By the time several guards showed up on the third morning to unlock his cell and lead him out, he was most of the way back to normal. Not there yet, but getting better all the time. Frank joined a line of other convicts assembling in the courtyard. Gideon was among them, and so was Cicero McCoy.
I've been wanting to get put on road detail ever since I got here. You made it almost right away, Morton.
What's better about this job? Besides being out in the open, I mean.
That's it. When you're working on the road, you're not behind these damn walls anymore. It makes it easier to get away, like we were talking about that other time.
Well, give me a few days to get my strength back, and I'll go with you.
No promises, Morton. When I see the chance, I'm going.
Well, boys, here we are, together again. We're getting to be sort of like the Three Musketeers, ain't we?
Who?
Characters in a book.
The Three Musketeers were good friends. Three soldiers in France.
I never cottoned to the idea of taking orders like a soldier, and I don't like Frenchies.
Well, I didn't say we had to be just like them.
Frank noticed that several of the convicts had heavy iron balls attached to their leg irons by means of a chain that was long enough for the men to carry the balls as they were walking. They were men who had tried to escape in the past, he reasoned. If they tried to run with one of those balls chained to them, they wouldn't move very fast or get very far. The guards could run them down without any trouble.
They take us out in the prison wagons?
Yeah. There's 24 of us today. They'll put 12 of us in each of those two wagons.
How many guards?
10 usually. Armed with rifles and pistols, and old Betsy sits under that tarp in that small wagon over there.
Gatling gun?
Yep. About 400 rounds a minute.
That makes it a little tougher, McCoy.
I don't care. I see a chance. I'm going.
The wagons had rolled down the hill and headed east out of the settlement of Yuma, following the stagecoach road. Almost an hour went by before the wagons stopped, where the road swung around a rocky outcropping topped by boulders to the left. To the right, the ground fell away at a fairly steep angle into a dry wash that followed the curve of the road. The gully had a gravelly floor, dotted with large rocks that looked like no water had run there for years. That wasn't the case, though. A torrent had poured through the wash recently enough so that the edges of the road were ragged and washed out in places. After the wagons came to a halt, the inmates were let out of the wagon and lined up.
Grab your shovels and build up a side of the road until it's good and solid again. Give me or any of the other guards any sass, and it'll be in the dark cell you'll go as soon as we get back to the prison. Hey, Morton there can tell you it ain't no picnic. Just in case you were thinking it was. Ain't that right, Morton?
Frank didn't answer. He stood there in stony silence.
Maybe you didn't know it, Morton, but the warden put me in charge of this detail. That means you do what I tell you, just like you would if the warden told you to do it, and that means you don't ignore me either. I said, the dark cell ain't no picnic. Ain't that right, Morton?
Yeah, that's right, no picnic.
Yeah, now we've settled that, I best point out something else for those of you who ain't been on the road detail before. You think that since we're on the outside of the walls of the prison now, it'd be easy to run away? Well, we got a couple of special deals for anybody who wants to try that. First, we put a ball and chain on you. And if that don't work?
The guard gestured toward the smaller wagon, which had come to a stop, still keeping its distance of approximately 50 yards. Two of the men who had ridden on it had climbed into the back, and now they removed the canvas tarp from the object carried there, exposing the sleek lines of a Gatling gun.
That's right. We got us a Gatling. If we need to, we can mow down a whole lot of you in less than half a minute, and we'll do it too if it looks like you're gonna get away. Don't you doubt it for a second.
Frank didn't doubt it at all. From the sound of the guard's voice, the man would have enjoyed watching the body spout blood and fall as the multiple barrels of the Gatling gun revolved and its deadly chatter filled the air. The trick for an escaping convict would be not only to get away, but to somehow silence that Gatling gun while he was making his escape. Either that, or somehow turn the Gatling's stuttering roar to his advantage somehow. For the next hour or so, the men were quiet as they worked. Then slowly, quiet conversations sprung up in small groups.
Gotta give these guards some credit. They don't neglect their duties.
No, sir. They're real diligent about their work.
The guards stayed out in the sun like the convicts and watched alertly as they worked. The prisoners shoveled up wheelbarrows full of rocky dirt, then wheeled those barrels along the road to the washed-out spots and dumped them there. Other men used their shovels to tamp down the new dirt and make it solid enough to support the weight of a stagecoach wheel. It was hard labor, especially under the merciless rays of the sun. Frank quickly discovered that he hadn't recovered as much of his strength as he thought he had. Weariness threatened to overwhelm him. He forced himself to keep working, but after a couple of hours, his head suddenly started spinning. And before he knew what had happened, he found himself on the ground where he had fallen. He heard the ominous sound of numerous guns being cocked. Squinting against the sun, Frank looked up to see himself surrounded by guards.
What's wrong with you, Morton? If this is some sort of trick, you'll regret it.
It ain't a trick, boss. He ain't faking. You know he just done 2 days in the cell not long ago. Shoot, he probably shouldn't even be out here working.
Just give me a second to catch my breath. Y'all be all right.
He picked up the shovel he had dropped when he collapsed and used it to help himself climb back to his feet. But when he tried to take a step, he swayed and almost fell again.
For God's sake, let me give you a hand, Morton.
Take him over to the wagons, McCoy. I reckon he'll have to sit in the shade for a while and get him a drink.
Frank was about to mutter his thanks when McCoy leaned closer and whispered so that only he could hear.
Well, keep it up. The bastards believe it. I won't forget how you helped me get away, Morton.
No, not yet. McCoy was about to try something, and Frank was in no shape to stop him, let alone escape with him. They had to wait. The guards' horses were picketed next to the wagons. The teams were still hitched up. If McCoy jumped onto one of the wagons and whipped up the team, then stampeded the saddle horses, he'd stand a chance of getting away, Frank realized, as he forced his brain to work as fast as it could. That is, McCoy would stand a chance of getting away if it hadn't been for that Gatling gun. When the guards manning the gun opened up, hundreds of slugs would chop the wagon to pieces, and McCoy with it.
McCoy! Don't!
They're not paying attention. I'll never get a better chance.
They had reached the closest wagon. McCoy lowered Frank to the ground.
So long, pard.
No!
Before Frank could stop him, McCoy sprang to the wagon seat and grabbed the reins that were looped around the brake lever.
Hey, McCoy! What?
McCoy slashed the rumps of the team with the reins. The startled horses leaped into motion. But even as that was happening, Frank forced his muscles to work, no matter how much they protested. Frank twisted around, lunged up, and grabbed the back of the wagon as it went past him. He was pulled off his feet, but he didn't lose his grip. McCoy must have felt the added weight. He looked around and saw Frank trying to pull himself into the back of the wagon.
Morton, let's go!
Frank didn't release his hold on the wagon. Instead, he hauled himself into the bed, sprawling on his stomach. He looked back over his shoulder and saw the Gatling gun swinging toward them with its deadly circular array of barrels. In a matter of seconds, flame and lead would begin spitting from those barrels, and McCoy wasn't anywhere close to being out of range of the weapon.
Yeah!
Moving automatically, not thinking about what he was doing, just acting, Frank scrambled to his feet as McCoy sent the wagon careening through the group of saddle horses, just as Frank expected him to do. And also as expected, the horses spooked, jerked loose from their pickets, and scattered in a wild stampede. The guards would have to spend some time rounding them up again, but that didn't matter. because by then McCoy would be riddled with bullets from the Gatling gun, unless Frank could somehow prevent it. And with McCoy's death, the chances of ever finding that hidden loot would die as well. Frank launched himself in a dive over the back of the seat. He slammed into McCoy. Wrapping his arm around the outlaw's shoulder, he drove both of them toward the side of the wagon. Frank shoved McCoy right off the seat. Both men tumbled to the ground, landing hard and rolling over and over in the dust. And as they did, a hail of bullets scouted from the Gatling gun and tore into the wagon with devastating force. Splinters flew as the slugs chewed their way through the vehicle. Wagon spokes snapped. The two horses in the back of the six-horse team screamed and stumbled as they were hit. One of the wheels flew off, and the wagon came to a lurching, shuddering, skidding halt. The two wounded horses collapsed in their traces. Frank and McCoy lay there, unhit by the bullets, as the Gatling gun fell silent. After the terrible chattering roar that had filled the air, the quiet was almost eerie.
Don't you move, either of you! I swear I'll finish you! You son of a bitch! Why'd you do that, damn you? I could have made it!
No. No, you couldn't have. Look at that wagon, McCoy. The seat's shot to hell. You'd have 40 or 50 bullet holes in you right now if I hadn't knocked you off there.
McCoy pushed himself into a sitting position and glared at the wrecked wagon. What Frank had said was beyond dispute. McCoy would be dead now if not for what Frank had done.
All right. I reckon it was a fool play. But I've been in here longer than you have, Morton, and I got more waiting for me outside.
He didn't say anything else, but Frank knew he was talking about that 80 grand. Frank also knew that Warden Townsend would have to punish McCoy for this attempted escape. It would look too odd if he didn't. And after this, it would look a mite strange, too, if Townsend turned around and assigned McCoy to the road gang again. This was the worst break so far, Frank thought. McCoy's impulsive act had set everything back at best, and made the plan unworkable at worst. If only McCoy had waited. It looked like Frank would have to be mighty patient if he wanted to have any chance of pulling this off. But being patient was easier said than done, especially when a man was in prison.
I'm disappointed in you, McCoy. You've been a good prisoner while you were here. I suppose that was all an act, wasn't it? You've just been biding your time, waiting for a chance to escape.
McCoy didn't say anything, but his chin jutted out in defiance as his jaw tightened. He stared straight ahead without looking at the warden.
Well, we'll see how you do with that iron ball we've had placed on your leg irons. That should slow you down the next time you get these bright ideas.
Townsend shifted his angry gaze to Frank. From the looks of it, it almost appeared that Townsend had forgotten Frank wasn't a real convict. He seemed genuinely mad.
And as for you, Morton, you came damned close to getting yourself killed. Were you trying to escape too?
Is that what the guards told you?
Never mind what the guards told me. Just answer the question.
I didn't think McCoy's gonna make it before that Gatling gun got him. He's a friend, so I knocked him off the wagon to save his life.
A likely story. I think both of you tumbled off the wagon by accident. You thought you'd get away too, Morton. Well, I'm tired of your troublemaking. You're going back in the dark cell.
Hold on, Warden. Morton's telling you the truth. He was just trying to help me. He just got out of the dark cell a few days ago. You put him back in there, now it's liable to kill him.
And what is that to you?
Well, he did save my life.
All right. Since you two are friends, you can go in the dark cell together.
Frank knew from the startled expressions the guards wore that this was unusual. The dark cell was so small, it was possible that two men had never before been put in there at the same time. With both of them in there, the space would be more cramped and uncomfortable than ever.
24 hours. I think that will be enough time.
Maybe the warden was being canny after all, Frank thought. By putting them both in the dark cell, Townsend was cutting down the time that McCoy would be out of commission. And yet there was nothing all that suspicious about it.
What about the ball and chain, Warden?
It stays on McCoy. Now get them out of here.
Some of the convicts were out in the large open area, watching with avid interest as Frank and McCoy were placed in the dark cell. Frank had spotted red-headed Jim Nash, and beside him, bald Connor Jessup limped along on a pair of crutches, his injured knee still heavily bandaged. Both men grinned in pleasure at the prospect of Frank and McCoy being tossed into the hole in the hillside.
This'll teach you to never try running again.
Awkwardly, because of the darkness, they lowered themselves to the floor and sat with their backs against the walls. Neither man said anything for a while.
If you're waiting for me to apologize for you being thrown in here, you're wasting your time, Morton.
I don't give a damn whether you apologize or not. Anyway, you don't have anything to be sorry for. What I did was my own choice. I could have stood back and let them shoot you to pieces with that devil gun.
Yeah, you could have.
Yeah, my choice.
The two were silent for a good while, with McCoy again breaking that silence.
That damn warden was wrong. You weren't trying to escape with me.
This time.
What's that mean?
Just what I said. I wasn't trying to escape with you this time. But maybe next time, if we plan it out and don't act on the spur of the moment, it might be a different story.
You want to bust out of here too?
Hell, what do you think? I never wanted to get locked up in the first place. And now, with Nash and Jessup in here hating me so bad, I sure as hell don't want to be here. Sooner or later, those two will try to kill me.
Yeah, you're right. Jessup's got a powerful hate for you, and Nash will go along with him and help him. If you stay in here, it's a death sentence, not a life sentence.
So, what do you say, McCoy? We come to an agreement and figure out a better way to get out of this place?
Maybe. There's something you're not saying. An agreement about what?
If we're going to be partners in an escape, we're going to be partners right down the line. I heard about you, McCoy. You're famous. You're the fella who stole 80 grand from a bank in Tucson, and the authorities never got the loot back.
And you want a share of it.
I want half. If I help you escape, and both of us get out of here, I get half the loot from that bank job.
Go to hell. That money's mine.
Yeah, and it's doing you a lot of good while you're in here, and it's out there somewhere, isn't it?
I'll escape on my own. I don't need your help, Morton.
Without my help, you'd be dead now, remember? Your first attempt on your own was so successful that Gatling gun would have chopped you to pieces.
McCoy didn't say anything, but Frank knew he had to be turning things over in his mind. It was McCoy's nature to bargain, so Frank wasn't surprised a few moments later.
Half's out of the question, but I'll give you a fourth of the bank money.
A third?
30%, not a damn penny more.
24 grand. I can live with that.
We have a deal?
Yeah, we have a deal.
And shake on it.
Frank would have preferred that they didn't do that. It went against the grain for Frank Morgan to give his word to anybody, even a vicious murderer and bank robber, knowing full well that he was going to break it. Shaking on it just made him even more uncomfortable. But he didn't have any choice in the matter. He put out his hand and felt around in the darkness until he encountered McCoy's hand. They shook to seal the deal.
Now there's a little matter of figuring out exactly how we're going to make that escape.
Any ideas?
Well, the Gatling gun is the key. That, and being outside, working on the road detail.
Frank and McCoy spent hours talking about how the prison was run and how the work details assigned to the stagecoach road operated.
We have to get our hands on that Gatling some way, or at least fix it till they can't use it against us.
The guards are bound to know that's how the convicts think. That's why the wagon with the Gatling gun on it stays back a good ways. I'll bet if a prisoner even starts toward it, they chop him down like a weed.
More than likely. Let's put that aside for a minute and think about what we're going to do for transportation. Taking one of the wagons and scattering the guards' horses wasn't a bad idea. But it'd be better if we could get our hands on a couple of those horses for ourselves.
And stampede the rest so they couldn't come after us?
Well, we'd almost have to, but they'd be on our trail too quick.
They could unhitch the horses from the wagons and ride them.
Well, those are draft animals, not saddle horses. I reckon we can outrun them.
What we need is a distraction. Something to keep all the guards so busy that we could get to the wagon with the Gatling gun before they realized what we were doing.
Well, that would work all right. Oh, but what could it be?
That's gonna take some more thinking.
The heat inside the dark cell made it difficult to think or even stay awake. Eventually, both men dozed off. Frank had no idea how long he was asleep, but when he awoke, there was the germ of an idea in his mind. He thought it over for a while before bringing it up to McCoy, fleshing it out and trying to consider all the angles. When he did broach the subject again and started talking about what he had come up with, McCoy saw right away what Frank was getting at.
It might work. A little bit of luck just might work, Morton.
They continued talking about the escape plan, and the time in the dark cell passed faster than either man would have dreamed that it could. That didn't mean they weren't damned glad to get out when the time came. Both were cramped up and weak from hunger and thirst, and they blinked against the harsh light as they stepped from the dark cell. But even though they were the only ones who knew it, they firmly believed that those were their first steps toward freedom, no matter how unsteady they might be. As Frank had expected, neither he nor McCoy were put back on the road detail right away. For Warden Townsend to do so would make it look too much like he wanted them to escape. But that was all right, because the delay gave them both time to recuperate from the time they had spent in the dark cell, and to recruit the help they would need to make their plan work. Gideon was the first one they approached. Frank and Gideon were in the prison yard, leaning against the wall in the shade.
It's simple. A fight breaks out among the men working on the stagecoach road, and while the guards are trying to deal with that, we grab some horses, stampede the other mounts, and take off for the tall and uncut.
It's been tried before. Some fellas did that while they were coming in through the sally port. There was enough confusion that they were able to slip away. But the guards ran them to earth pretty quick and brought them back in chains.
That's because they were right here at the prison when they made their escape. We'll be out, away from it. And if we scatter the other horses, we'll be long gone before any pursuit can get started after us.
Well, it might work. Now you say McCoy's part of this?
That's right.
Yeah. I reckon we can give it a try. We'll need more men involved, though. And the guards will have to believe it's a real fight, not something that we staged.
That's why it's going to be a real fight. I'm counting on Jessup and Nash to see to that.
Jessup and Nash? They hate your guts, Fred. And with that bum knee you gave him, Jessup ain't going to be put on no road gang.
He might drive one of the wagons. He's getting around pretty good now, and they're going to have to find some sort of work for him to do. It's about the only chore he can handle.
Yeah, they might do that. Could be a long time before everything lines up just right, though.
Then we'll wait.
There was nothing else they could do. More time passed. Days stretched into a couple of weeks. A dozen men agreed to take part in the riot in hopes that they could escape during the confusion. Frank managed to catch Warden Townsend's eye one day when the warden was making his rounds of the prison. The next day, Townsend sent his bespectacled assistant to fetch Frank. A couple of guards escorted him to Townsend's office. Since Frank's two visits to the dark cell, he had been a model prisoner. He believed that the guards figured his spirit was broken now, and he wasn't as much of a threat to cause trouble or attempt to escape.
You have a visitor, Morton.
The warden waved a hand toward a man who wore a dusty black suit and the white collar of a priest. As the man turned toward him, Frank recognized the face of Bob Bardwell, one of Abner Hoyt's crew of bounty hunters. With his bland, unmemorable face, Bardwell had no trouble passing for a priest.
Howdy, Padre.
My son? It's good to see you again, Uncle Fred.
Guards, we'll be okay here for a few minutes. Why don't you wait outside?
What the hell's going on here, Morgan? You've been in here for more than a month now.
You don't have to tell me that. I remember every single miserable day of that time. But I think I've just about got everything set up the way we want it. McCoy trusts me.
You've befriended him.
I didn't say that. I'm not sure a man like McCoy ever has any real friends, but he thinks he can use me to help him escape, and that's all he really cares about. He's liable to double-cross me as soon as we get out, but we've known that was a possibility all along.
What do you need me to do?
Send these men out to work on the stagecoach road.
I can do that with no problem.
Doesn't matter who else you put on the detail, as long as two of them are Jim Nash and Connor Jessup.
Nash and Jessup?
Who are they?
Quickly, Frank explained about the trouble he'd had with the two men.
As much as they hate me, no one is going to question that the fight is real.
Then what? You can't count on something as simple as a riot to provide enough of a distraction.
Yeah, I know. That's where the avalanche comes in.
Avalanche?
When we were working out there before, I spotted several boulders up on top of the bluff that borders the road. There were others down in the bed of that wash on the other side. They told me that rocks roll down the slope sometimes. The wagon with the Gatling gun on it was parked right in the path of some of the boulders that are still up on that bluff.
So when the trouble breaks out, you're going up the hill to start those rocks rolling. They crash into the wagon with the Gatling gun, which has been abandoned by the guards when they see the boulders coming at them.
That's right. I thought for a while about trying to capture the gun, but we can't risk that. McCoy might open up with it and slaughter a bunch of folks. Guards and convicts alike.
I don't want a bloodbath out there.
That's why we're doing it this way. Once I've eliminated the threat of the Gatling gun, McCoy and I'll grab a couple of horses and take off. Soon as we're gone, the extra guards are going to be waiting nearby can move in, quash the riot, and get everything back under control.
Extra guards? Oh, I see. It won't matter then if the other prisoners figure out it was all a setup. You and McCoy will already be gone.
You're on your way to that $80,000, and Abner and the rest of us will be trailing you.
Just don't get too close. We don't want to tip McCoy off to the fact that we're being followed.
We won't have to get close. We know the general area where you'd be heading.
That's right. Ambush Valley.
After the meeting in the warden's office, Frank was returned to the prison yard to join the other inmates. He found McCoy and Gideon waiting there for him.
What was that about? Warden's not going to throw you in the dark cell again, is he? Seems to like doing that.
Well, not with the way I've been careful to behave myself. All of us need to make him and the guards think that starting more trouble is the farthest thing from our minds. Until the right moment comes to get the hell out of here.
McCoy and Gideon nodded in agreement with that.
I had a visitor. My nephew.
It ain't visiting day. Anyway, you never had nobody come to see you before, Fred.
The boy is a priest. He's my sister's boy. He thinks he's doing the Lord's work by coming to see his poor convict uncle. Townsend went along with him, even though it's not the regular visiting day.
Makes sense. Normal visiting days are Sundays. I guess Padres would have a hard time making it on the Sabbath.
Something interesting did happen when I was up in the warden's office. Townsend mentioned that he's going to put us all back on the road detail soon. If enough of the men who are in on our plan are part of the same detail, we'll be out of here before you know it.
Can't be soon enough to suit me.
McCoy gave Frank a meaningful glance, and Frank knew the bank robber was thinking about that $80,000. They were the only ones who had talked about it. They didn't know if Gideon was aware of the loot or not. The man had never mentioned it. All Gideon was really interested in was his freedom. The next couple of days had dragged even more than usual. But at last, the guards came and marched Frank, McCoy, Gideon, and nearly two dozen more men out of their cell blocks and got them loaded onto wagons. Frank saw the men whose names he had given to Townsend among the group. And Connor Jessup sat on the driver's seat of one of the wagons, just as Frank had requested. Nash was there too. At long last, everything was falling into place. The wagons had rolled out, surrounded by guards as usual. The wagon with the Gatling gun mounted in the back trundled along behind, also as usual. There was nothing to indicate that this was anything other than a normal work detail going out on a normal day, just the way Frank wanted it. After a couple of hours, the wagons reached their destination. When they came to a stop, it was in the same place as they'd been before, on the stretch of road between the dry wash and the rocky bluff. Frank eyed the slope and tried to pick out the best route to the top. He'd have to cover that ground in a hurry, and if any of the guards noticed what he was doing, he'd probably have to dodge some bullets on the way too. But if he made it, there were several of the boulders perched precariously enough that he thought he could put his shoulder against them and get them rolling with a good hard shove. He looked at McCoy and Gideon and gave them a nod. Gideon would accompany Frank up the hill and help him shove the boulders down. McCoy couldn't do that because of the heavy iron ball still chained to him. They passed along the signal to the others. One of the convicts sauntered over to Nash and said something to him. Frank couldn't hear the words, but they must have been pretty vile because Nash jerked around with a surprised glare on his face.
What the hell did you just say to me?
The other convict repeated it, with even more emphasis this time. Several of the other men lowered their shovels and looked around. They started drifting toward the confrontation. Some of them were part of Frank's plan. Others were Nash's friends.
Make it fast, boys. Guards are already starting to notice.
Nash suddenly lost his temper and swung his shovel at the convict who'd been baiting him. The man sprang back and blocked the blow with his own shovel. Instantly, men were shouting and hurrying to join in the fracas. Nothing broke up the monotony of hard work like a good fight. And this was a good one. A yelling, fist-swinging melee that spread like wildfire. The guards, who had been spread out around the work detail, rushed in to try to break it up. The men with the Gatling gun were alert, but didn't make a move. They held the trump card in case this was more than the mere ill-tempered brawl that it appeared to be. Frank dropped his shovel and started up the slope toward the boulders. Gideon was right behind him, he saw as he glanced over his shoulder. They had to use their hands for balance, and the leg irons attached to their ankles made it even more difficult to scramble up the bluff. But desperation gave them speed they might not have had otherwise. With all the shouting already going on, Frank didn't hear it when one of the guards spotted him and Gideon.
You two, hold it right there!
Bullets thudded into the hillside as guards opened fire on them. They were easy targets up here on the slope, but luckily, they were almost at the top. Frank drove hard with his legs and hauled himself over the lip of the bluff. Gideon sprawled on the ground beside him a second later. They rolled over, sprang to their feet, and lunged up behind the rocks. The boulders provided some cover for them now, at least for the moment.
Come on, Gideon!
Frank put his shoulder against one of the rocks he had chosen to start the avalanche. He shoved as hard as he could, but the boulder didn't budge. Then Gideon threw his weight against the stone, too, and it rocked forward. Frank and Gideon pushed harder, and they almost fell down as the boulder suddenly rolled forward and tipped over the edge of the bluff. Its great weight carried it straight down the slope, straight toward the wagon with the Gatling gun. As he threw himself behind another boulder, Frank caught a glimpse of the guards swinging the deadly repeater around, preparing to open fire. That wasn't going to do any good, though. Bullets wouldn't stop an avalanche.
Let's get this one, Gideon!
Ride with your friend!
Frank and Gideon threw themselves against the second boulder, which was a little smaller. It rolled over the edge and started bouncing and rumbling down the slope, taking dirt and gravel and other rocks with it. The horses hitched to the wagon snorted and whinnied and jerked around in their traces as the rocks descended toward them, faster and faster. The guards finally abandoned the wagon, leaping off frantically and running toward the riot, which was still going on along the road above the wash. The first boulder landed perfectly, smashing down on top of the wagon, shattering the bed and the wheels, and putting the Gatling gun out of commission permanently. The other rocks pelted down around it, but they no longer mattered. The damage had been done. Frank headed for the edge of the bluff. He had to slide down now, join McCoy, and get both of them on horseback so they could gallop away from here. Frank paused and turned his head and saw that Gideon had fallen to his knees. The convict pressed a hand to his chest. Blood welled between his fingers. More blood welled from Gideon's mouth. He managed to grin.
Got hit on the way up. Looks like I won't be getting away to have a hell of a good time for me, Fred.
Sorry, Gideon.
Frank realized that Gideon must have already been mortally wounded when he was helping push those boulders over the edge of the bluff. Even though he was dying, he had still pitched in to do his part in the escape plan. With no time to mourn, Frank turned back to the slope, stepping over the edge and sliding down to the road, raising dust and scattering gravel in front of him in a miniature version of the avalanche that had wiped out the Gatling gun. One of the guards trying to break up the fight heard him coming and turned around just in time for Frank to smash clubbed fists into his face. The man went down, out cold, and Frank snatched up his rifle. He put the barrel of the Winchester against the chain that ran between his leg irons and pulled the trigger. The chain parted as the slug tore through it. Frank's legs were free now. Carrying the rifle, Frank ran along the fringes of the melee and looked for McCoy, who was supposed to be making his way toward the horses. He spotted the bank robber. McCoy had the chain attached to his wrist shackles, looped around the neck of a guard from behind. The guard's face was already purple as McCoy choked the life out of him. Before Frank could do anything, McCoy heaved hard on the chain, and the guard's neck snapped. He went limp all over. McCoy dropped him and snatched up the dead man's rifle.
Pull back on the chain attached to the ball!
After McCoy had done so, then McCoy blasted his own ankle chains apart. Now both men could move around much more freely. They still had to grab a couple of horses and stampede the others, though, and by now the guards were beginning to realize what was going on. They left the brawling prisoners alone and started to regroup. The men who were in on the plan broke for the horses, too, getting in the way and complicating matters. Frank and McCoy were the only ones who had managed to get their hands on rifles and partially free themselves, though, so they had an advantage. They reached the horses first. McCoy grabbed the reins of a spooked mount and swung up into the saddle. Frank was reaching for one of the animals when a heavy hand came down on his shoulder and jerked him around.
Oh, no, you don't.
Jessup threw his tree trunk-like arms around Frank in a crushing bear hug.
You are getting away, Martin!
Jessup cared more about avenging himself on Frank than he did anything else. That much was obvious. Frank tried to pull free, but it was like being caught in a bear trap. He felt his ribs creaking, and he knew that in another few seconds they would begin to snap under that awful pressure. He did the only thing he could. Since he had levered another round into the Winchester's firing chamber after using the weapon to blast apart one of McCoy's chains, he pressed the muzzle against Jessup's left foot and pulled the trigger. Still, Jessup didn't let go. Frank headbutted him in the face. The combined pain was too much for Jessup to withstand. His arms fell away, and he collapsed.
Get up!
McCoy was already on the move, galloping back and forth, shouting, and firing his rifle in the air to stampede the other horses. Frank made a desperate grab for one of the animals as it lunged past him and managed to get hold of the saddle. He hung on for dear life and finally managed to clamber aboard the horse and get settled in the saddle. The other horses had scattered. McCoy headed north, banging his heels against his mount's flanks to get as much speed out of the horse as he could. Frank followed. He glanced back over his shoulder to see that the other men who'd been part of the plan were running around aimlessly. They had hoped to grab horses too, but they hadn't known that Frank and McCoy were going to stampede the other mounts. Even if a few of them managed to escape, they would be rounded up quickly. Those men were all hardened criminals and didn't deserve much sympathy. Frank wouldn't forget, though, how Gideon had helped him roll those boulders, even with a bullet hole all the way through it. Not far north was the spot where the Gila River flowed into the Colorado from the east. When Frank and McCoy reached that confluence of streams, they turned and rode east along the bluff that overlooked the Gila, which ran through a narrow, twisting canyon. They slowed their horses to a walk, knowing that they couldn't afford to run the animals into the ground.
We did it! We'll never see the inside of those damn walls again, Morton.
That's right. I figure on making the bastards kill me before I'll ever let myself be taken prisoner again.
You won't have to worry about that. If we can stay ahead of them long enough to get to that cache of mine, we'll have enough money to get across into Mexico, spend the rest of our lives there, sipping tequila and patting senoritas on their fat little rumps.
Sounds good to me.
So far, McCoy had showed no signs of pulling a double cross. Maybe the outlaw was playing things straight for once in his life. Frank wasn't going to fully believe that until he saw it with his own eyes, though.
We gotta do something about these chains and prison uniforms. Anybody who sees us will know right away that we're escaped convicts.
I don't know what we can do about the chains. Since we don't have the keys, it'd take a hacksaw to get them off.
We'll find a place where we can get a hacksaw and some normal clothes. There are bound to be some ranches out here somewhere. They're probably pretty few and far between, since it takes a whole hell of a lot of ground to support any stock in this godforsaken territory. But if we can find one, we can take what we need.
Frank was careful not to allow the concern he felt at McCoy's words to show on his face. He didn't want to put innocent people in harm's way any more than he had to. and a rancher and his family would definitely be in harm's way if Cicero McCoy paid them a visit. As McCoy had said, he would take what he needed and probably kill anybody who got in his way. If he tried to, Frank would stop him, even if that meant abandoning the plan. Conrad might not like it, but the lives of innocent folks meant more to Frank than $80,000 worth of bank money. As he had told his son, that loot could be replaced. Frank would never miss it. He had gotten involved in this only because of the spirit Conrad had shown and the desire to truly bring McCoy to justice, which included recovering the money. They pushed the horses to a fast trot again. Frank and McCoy both looked behind them on a regular basis. McCoy was checking their back trail for signs of pursuit. Frank didn't have to do that. He knew the pursuit was back there in the form of Abner Hoyt and the other bounty hunters working for Conrad. What Frank wanted to be sure of was that Hoyt and the others weren't crowding him and McCoy. It was another hour or so before McCoy spoke again.
Gave the bastards a slip. That plan we hatched worked like a charm, Morton.
Except that Gideon got killed.
Yeah, well, that's too bad. But we weren't really going to bring him with us anyway, now were we?
Frank shook his head. The man he was pretending to be wouldn't show a great deal of concern over Gideon's fate. Wouldn't really even give a damn, probably. So he didn't say anything else about it. A few minutes later, they were both distracted anyway, when McCoy suddenly reined his mount to a halt, stood up in the stirrups, and pointed.
Look yonder.
Must be some sort of trouble.
Let's go find out. Yeah, move, you old nag!
Frank didn't have any choice but to ride after him and hope that they weren't waltzing into something that they couldn't get out of. They topped a rise a few minutes later and looked down across a shallow valley where a creek meandered into the Gila River from the south. The stream had to be spring-fed because there was water in it even at this dry time of year. A few scrubby cottonwoods grew along its banks, and a sparse carpet of grass covered the valley floor. There was enough graze here to support a small herd of cattle. The animals cropped peacefully at the grass on the far side of the valley. There was nothing peaceful about the scene on the near side of the valley, though. The roof of the adobe cabin that had been built there in the shade of a cottonwood was on fire. Flames leaped from the windows of the cabin as well. The adobe walls wouldn't burn, but the roof and the interior would. In the yard between a small corral and the cabin were the bodies of a couple of dogs, big shaggy curs that reminded Frank of Wolf. They had been skewered by arrows, and the sight made Frank's jaw tighten with anger. Likely there was even worse to be found down there, though.
Come on! Maybe we can save some of the clothes and find something to get these chains off of us.
Yeah.
Frank didn't care about clothes and chains right now. He was more concerned with the possibility that some of the settlers might still be alive down there, remote though that chance might be. He rode hard down the hill with McCoy. They reined in when they reached the yard. Frank saw a huddled shape lying just inside the cabin's open door. The rancher lay face down, and the back of his shirt was dark and sodden with blood.
Nobody in that cabin is alive. I know that for a fact.
You reckon Apaches did this?
No doubt about it. I tangled with them a few times back in my younger days.
I never was much of an Indian fighter myself. Used to ride with a fella who was half Apache, half Mex. He said the Apaches down in Mexico still raid up here across the border sometimes.
That's right. That's what happened here. They killed everybody, set fire to the cabin, and ran off the horses.
McCoy nodded toward the other side of the valley where the cattle still grazed.
They didn't bother the cows.
An Apache doesn't have much use for a cow. You can't ride cattle, and Apaches prefer horse meat to beef.
I'm gonna go see if there's a hacksaw or anything else we can use over there in that barn. I reckon all the extra clothes are probably burned up already in the cabin.
Look for a shovel, too.
What for? We're not gonna take the time to dig any graves.
The adobe shed was separated from the cabin by about 40 feet of open ground. McCoy rode over to it and dismounted. A door hung crookedly on leather hinges. He swung it open, then jerked back as a shot blasted from inside the shed. Frank saw the crimson bloom of colt flame in the shadows.
Son of a bitch!
No, McCoy, don't shoot!
Frank lunged toward the outlaw, grabbed the barrel of the rifle, and wrenched it up as McCoy pulled the trigger. The shot blasted harmlessly into the air. Frank shoved McCoy to the side, out of the line of fire, and ducked the other way himself.
The hell are you doing?
Don't shoot! We're friends!
McCoy glared at him, but didn't fire again. He kept his rifle trained on the open door from his side of the shed, though, as did Frank.
Come on out of there! We won't hurt you, whoever you are!
Help me, mister. I'm hurt awful bad. Sorry I tried to gun you. I thought you were some of them Redskins. Come back
Careful. I reckon it could be a trick.
I don't think so. The boy sounded hurt pretty bad to me.
Frank stepped forward. Frank dropped to a knee next to the bloody shape lying on the ground inside the shed. Enough light came through the open door and gaps in the ceiling for him to see that the unlucky young fellow was shot to pieces. He must have been wounded several times as he ran for the shed. It was a little surprising that he was still alive. Frank knew there was nothing he could do for the boy.
Take it easy, son. You're gonna be all right now.
The young man was 16 or 17, with sandy hair and blue eyes that were revealed as his eyelids flickered open. Those eyes were filled with pain, but there was nothing Frank could do about that.
It was patches. They come out of nowhere. Pa! Ma! Are they?
They're fine.
The lie was a mercy. The rancher, this boy's pa, was dead. And his mother was probably inside that burning cabin.
You gotta help them!
Don't worry, son. We'll take care of your ma and pa, too.
That meant burying them, since it was all that was left that anyone could do for them. McCoy rolled his eyes at the idea, but Frank ignored him for the moment.
Was there anybody else here? Got any brothers or sisters?
No. Didn't mean them. Meant the Soren guards. Engines were headed for their place. Then they rode out.
A chill went through Frank. If there was another ranch in the area, as the youngster's words indicated, it would probably prove too tempting a target for the Apaches to pass up.
Gotta help Ingrid. Don't let Apaches get her.
Where's the Soren guard spread? How do we find it?
East of here. About 3 miles. Help Ingrid.
Frank didn't know for sure who Ingrid was, but he could make a pretty good guess. The Soren guard family probably had a daughter about this boy's age, and he was sweet on her. Now he was scared that the raiding party would hit the Soren guard ranch next, and he was probably right about that, too.
We'll head over there right now. You'll be all right until we...
Frank stopped short as he realized that the boy was already all right, or as all right as he ever would be again. His chest had stopped rising and falling, and the peacefulness of death had smoothed away the lines of pain and terror on his face.
There's an axe here. Maybe we can use it to chop these chains off. Can't do anything with it about the shackles themselves, though. That'll have to wait.
It'll all have to wait. We gotta head for the Soren guard ranch and give him a hand, if it's not too late already.
Are you serious, Morton? That's none of our damn business!
Frank picked up the cap and ball pistol and checked the cylinder as he straightened to his feet. The gun had 5 shots left in it. The boy had managed to reload after he made it into the shed, and he hadn't fired any of the rounds, except the one when McCoy opened the door.
I gave that boy my word.
Well, I didn't. I'm not gonna waste my time burying him or his folks, and I'm not riding to the rescue of those Scandahoovians he was talking about either. Hell, the Indians have probably wiped them out already anyway.
Maybe not. But I gave my word, and if we help them, maybe they'll help us. We still need a hacksaw and some clothes.
Yeah, there's that. Oh, hell. Wait up, Morton. I'll ride over there with you. But I'm bringing this axe along.
Frank and McCoy topped another rise and found themselves looking down into a valley much like the one where the other ranch was located. The creek that ran through this one was about dried up, though, with only a few puddles left in its bed, and the vegetation was sparse. The ranch house, barn, and a long, low building that was probably a bunkhouse were all built of adobe with thatched roofs. Puffs of powder smoke came from the main house and the bunkhouse as defenders fired at the figures in high-topped moccasins, breechcloths, blue shirts, and red headbands who crouched behind every available bit of cover and blazed away at the buildings. Frank couldn't help but think about Abner Hoyt and the other bounty hunters who were back there somewhere behind them. The addition of 8 battle-hardened fighting men might make all the difference in the world if Hoyt and his companions pitched in to help run off the Apaches. But to do so would reveal their presence to McCoy and ruin the plan. Frank didn't think Hoyt would do that. The man wanted the rest of the reward Conrad had promised too much to risk it. Frank decided that Hoyt and the others would hang back, close enough to keep an eye on what was going on, but wouldn't take a hand unless circumstances forced them to do so.
Morton, look at the top of the bluff!
An Apache crept along the top of the bluff. He held a burning torch in one hand, and when he reached a point directly behind the house, he raised himself up and lifted his arm, poised to throw the torch down onto the roof and set it afire. In the instant that Frank had to act, he snapped the rifle he carried to his shoulder, drew a bead, and pressed the trigger. The Apache on the bluff was driven backward by the slug that punched into his broad chest.
Hell of a shot, Morton.
Yeah, and it got some attention down there, too.
Several of the Apaches who were attacking the ranch twisted around at the sound of the shot, and now they opened fire on the two newcomers at the top of the hill. Coolly, ignoring the bullets whistling around them, Frank and McCoy reined their horses back over to the far side of the slope where the animals would be safely out of the line of fire and swung down from the saddle. They hurried back up to the crest, dropping flat and thrusting the barrels of their Winchesters over the hill so they could draw a bead on the renegades below. Frank opened fire. He didn't hurry his shots, and neither did McCoy beside him. They raked the attackers with regularly spaced shots, and their deadly accurate aim knocked two more Apaches off their feet. The rest of the war party broke and ran then, because they were still taking fire from the defenders in the ranch house and bunkhouse too. Caught between three forces like that, the raiders had no choice but to abandon their attack.
I count 17 Apache.
Yeah. No matter how many there are, as long as they're running away.
Frank and McCoy hurried the renegades on their way with a few more well-placed shots. A couple more Indians were dragging bullet-punctured legs as they fled. They followed the mostly dry creek, disappearing around a bend in the stream. The landscape in that direction was rocky, rugged, and uninviting. The Apaches would be able to lose themselves in that wasteland without any trouble.
I reckon we're not going after them.
I reckon you're right.
Let's get down there and see if those folks are properly grateful for our help.
Better be careful. One good look at these clothes and the chains, and they'll know we escaped from Yuma.
That doesn't matter. We saved their hides. That redskin bastard up on the bluff would have burned them out if not for your shot, Morton. All of them would have died. He'll give us a hand.
I wish I was as confident as you, McCoy.
Standing on top of the hill like that, both of them were visible to the people in the buildings down below. McCoy raised his rifle over his head in one hand and waved it back and forth.
We're coming in!
Frank didn't know if the bank robber's voice carried that far, but in all likelihood it did. They turned to retrieve their horses, and a few moments later, they were both riding down the ridge toward the Sorengard Ranch.